All right. Well, tonight I'm going to attempt to look at vision, and that's not receiving a vision from the Lord in the sense of the charismatic sense, but just the vision that we have for the kingdom and the purpose that God has for us. Now we ask ourselves, does God speak to all areas of life? It's obviously yes, we believe that. We've established that at different times. So we believe God has spoken and does speak to all areas of life. And Paul tells us himself in 2 Corinthians 10, those verses we often quote, verses 5 and 6, he tells us what he was constantly doing. And he's referring that to himself and the other apostles and saying, you know, we're casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing every thought into the captivity to Jesus Christ, or into the captivity to the obedience of Christ. So that's what Paul is constantly doing. He's pulling down any argument that exalts itself against the knowledge of Christ, and bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. So what you're getting here is an impression of this comprehensive assault that is coming upon him and coming to him from every aspect of life, where knowledge is exalting itself, false knowledge obviously, exalting itself against Christ's knowledge. And that's why he also said to Timothy in 2 Timothy 3 verses 16 and 17 that all scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be complete, thoroughly equipped for every good work. Once again, you're getting this comprehensive nature that God's word supplies the answers to all our issues and problems. So we are to believe, and through these passages and many others, we're led to believe that God's kingdom, his kingdom truth, is all-encompassing rather than restricted and narrow. I think too many times the modern church thinks of God's truth and his view on life and purposes, and it's a very narrow, restricted view. Whereas we need to have our minds broadened, where we're saying, no, God speaks to everything and addresses everything. Paul, having said that, if you put that in the light of what God said in Genesis 1, verses 27 and 28, where he explained that God created man in his own image, in the image of God he created him, male and female he created them. Then God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it, having dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. So we see there that's God's creative ordinance, this comprehensive responsibility he's given. We see Paul acknowledging that the way he dealt with himself in life. I've got to be thinking about every area of life in a biblical way, or else I'm going to be in trouble. I'm going to have problems. So God has given to man a comprehensive calling. It touches everything. This dominion calling that he lays out in Genesis touches every aspect of life. This world was created for God's glory, and he says man is to glorify God in everything in this world. And then he has also given us, according to Paul and other passages, a comprehensive word to match the comprehensive calling. So he's not only told us, this is the job you got to do, this is how you're going to do it. And so we have those two things that have been given to us in great abundance. And thus both testaments say, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word from the mouth of God. Another word for this comprehensive purpose and calling would be God's dominion. This is what it's about. This is what dominion is. I know dominion is a word that is kind of like a catchphrase that people will use. And it's become a term that if you use that phrase in some theological circles, just saying dominion labels you as something, and people will write you off or put you in a certain category. So the word dominion, just be forewarned that dominion is a word that is not liked generally in your evangelical and even some reformed circles. We find it in the scriptures, and so we're trying to understand, well, what is this dominion? So I'm saying God has given this dominion. It's a comprehensive word that means dominion, and I believe it's tied to our vision as well, the vision I'm trying to talk about. Man was created to exercise dominion over the whole earth for God's glory. That's why Paul has to bring every thought captive in obedience to Christ, rather than saying, well, only when I'm thinking about church-related issues in the narrow sense, then I have to bring every thought captive. He says, no, I'm bound to bring every thought. Wherever I look, I've got to bring that thought captive. I've got to tear down all that knowledge that exalts itself against Christ. So ultimately, this is what vision has to do with. It has to do with God's dominion, God's comprehensive calling, and God giving us his comprehensive word to enable us to do that calling. That's what I mean by vision. To know why we exist and to be about our Father's business. The most fundamental unit in the working of God's kingdom is the family. Thus, the most fundamental unit in the attaining of dominion is what? The family. Okay, so we need to make that connection. This is how God has set up his work to unfold. So how important is it for the most basic unit in the working of God's kingdom to understand its purpose and to have vision for that kingdom? for the work that God has given. It's critical. Because if the family drops the ball, if the family does not have a vision for that work, who's going to do it? We're going to get people picking it up. And we're going to have it trying to be done in different circles. And many times in our day and age, many Christians would believe that that kingdom work is done by the local congregation, by the church. But I don't believe that's where God places his emphasis. He places it upon the family. So what would an effective dominion unit look like? So we've got these little units everywhere, called by God to exercise dominion over all things. So what would an effective unit look like? Father leading, uniqueness to their own circumstances, wife and children pulling along in that same purpose and goal. We see now that when we're talking about family, we're talking about this unit, we're realizing how critical it is to the whole unfolding plan of God. It's not just, well, we're just emphasizing family because we're kind of kicking off on a tangent and exalting something that's not really central to what God's purposes are. It really is something that is at the core of what he is doing. So teamwork is essential for carrying out the specific family vision. Whose vision ought this to be? As we're coming down to the unit. It needs to be the father's vision, his purpose. So now, once again, now you start to feel the weight. As a father, as a leader in the home, you're starting to feel the weight now for the responsibility of this whole unfolding of God's plan. Now, we're not saying we're carrying it because we know the Spirit empowers and directs. So the norm is that God gives the vision to the father, who then rallies his team to achieve the goal. That's how the norm works. Thus, last time we looked at discipleship and how important it is to train the team members, beginning with the basic training. That's why we start from the earliest days training our children. That's the reason we said last time. It's for this vision or dominion purpose. That is the vision and goal that we have been called to. So when you say dominion, sometimes you might say, well, I don't know what that looks like. What do you mean by dominion? What does that entail? I think Christ summarized it. A good definition of what is meant by that dominion would be Christ's words in Matthew 28, where he said, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things that I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. So this is the ultimate goal of every family's vision, that all nations will be taught the truths of Christ. That's the goal. That's what we hope for. That's what we're aiming at. Now, this will vary in an incredible variety with each family, what that looks like, because life is so diverse, and that is one of the amazing aspects of the way God's kingdom works, is the diversity that he's got, the decentralized nature and the specialization that can happen in that decentralized, diversified setup. You've got these family units that are capable of doing tremendous work because of the nature of their art. It's the same as the whole concept of a free market, where it's decentralized, it's not controlled. That's when you get the most enterprising development, you get the most advances in technology, when it's the freedom for man to pursue his ideas and experiments where there's no interference from the outside. So that's our goal. But once again, it's multifaceted, because as a father, you're kind of split in many directions. You're training your children to be effective participants in their own units one day, as sons, as leaders, and daughters, as helpers to their husbands in the same kind of unit. You've got your own vision and purpose that you're doing. You've got the training on on the basic level of obedience and those kinds of things. So it's multifaceted, and it stretches us in many different directions and ways. And this makes it difficult, because often there are many simultaneous things that need our attention. And the later we get with the program, the more difficult it is, in the sense, you know, children are more grown up and there's all kinds of other dynamics that are involved. So effectiveness for the kingdom flows through family units functioning as family units, united in the goal of discipling the nations. So that's the ultimate goal. What that looks like, as I said, is going to vary greatly. So it's serious when families are not functioning in this way. In fact, not to function in this way is so removed from God's ways that's why he brings the curse, as Malachi tells us. I'll turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the children to the fathers, lest I come and strike the earth with a curse. Because once that thing is broken down, that unit is not functioning, then the earth is just waiting for judgment, because nothing is working. There is no fruit and productivity taking place. That's why you've got, for example, when you start to talk about the justness of God's judgments and laws, and somebody throws in your face, okay, so you think rebellious children should be executed? You say, yeah, I do. Why? Why? Think about it. In the light of what we're saying, why is that such a critical aspect in God's kingdom? Because you unravel there, at that point, where children refuse to obey parents. We're not talking about a four-year-old child who's having a tantrum, because you're still dealing with that child. You can spank them, but now we're talking about a big guy. But a big guy who's in rebellion against your household. And so you're saying, no, this is the standard. I'm holding the standard against you. This is what you have to do. And therefore, I'm going to discipline you for not holding to it. And then it starts a fight. And so the kid now strikes the parent. So the enforcing of the rule and authority cannot be carried out. So therefore, the parent then appeals to the next level of authority, which is the state, and says, this is broken down. And unless this is squelched, the whole of society unravels. God's whole kingdom purposes for that generation begins to unravel and fall apart. So, you know, we look at that in an emotional sense. Oh, you're going to execute children. No, we need to understand what is actually taking place when society comes to that position. You say, no, this is God preserving a society. It's preserving a people. And in the same way, God brings a curse on a nation is when the hearts of parents and children have disintegrated and drifted apart to such a degree that society really is falling apart. So it's important that families function in this way. And what is entailed in getting a family to function in this way? It's the order, as we've talked about many times before, where the husband is leading and he has a vision for it and he must be equipped. He needs to be equipped for the responsibility. But then a husband needs a wife to see the vision and be on board with him to accomplish this and support him in it. And then he needs the children to be trained as a team that they too can catch the vision and pursue it. Now, that's in a nutshell. That's very easy to say, isn't it? But if a husband and a father doesn't believe that this is how God's kingdom functions and how critical his role is in the outworking of God's purposes of dominion, then things break down right at the outset. And if it breaks down there, there will be no generational effectiveness. You can have a revival sweep through a place where people come to know Christ and that salvation can be true and genuine. And yet you can see that same thing fade in a very short time afterwards. The next generation already, you're saying, where is the fruit from that revival? And I'll trace it back, I believe, to this fact that the key ingredient of true reformation and dominion and kingdom change was missed. And that is the family. And how that family works as a unit, as opposed to shoveling it out somewhere to a parachurch organization or to the local congregation and saying the church, that's where the main thrust of God's work goes forward from. I believe it's definitely the family unit that is the main thrust. So much rests upon the family leader, getting it right. We're not talking about salvation here, but about generational effectiveness, about true dominion for the glory of God. So as fathers and husbands, it's important that we are confident in our God-given role as leader of our family. Because there can always be a sense of apology in the day and age that we live in, where we've got the equality of the sexes and everybody's equal, and who do you think you are to usurp your authority or to impose yourself upon us? We can start to become apologetic for that role and that responsibility that we've been given. When God-fearing men, as they assume their position of leadership, I believe their wives will follow. I really do. Why do you think I say that? It's the design, it's the creation mandate, eh? That's how it was set up. And so when men are leading, I believe the hearts of women, and I believe children are designed in the same way. I believe they follow. They want to follow. They want to do that. And I believe that's how God has created the world to function and how people do function. So we need to believe that. We need to stand upon those principles and say, no, this is the truth. So, you know, in this context, it might not be that applicable, but in other contexts, it definitely is, where you've got real tension at that level of husband and wife. And the husband can feel apologetic or insecure in taking the lead. He really has to develop a strength and say, you know, I've got to stand on God's word on this. It doesn't mean I become domineering and dictatorial, but I need to believe in the depths of my heart that this position comes from God. I haven't assumed it. I haven't usurped it, walked up and stolen it from someone. This is what God has laid upon me. And therefore, I'm responsible to do that. So even as you young men prepare for your futures, you need to realize that is something that God lays upon you just by the mere fact that He made you a male. And that responsibility is great and weighty. So God made the woman to be a helper suitable to her husband's calling. And I believe she will follow that when he leads. Now, nothing's instant. Nothing's overnight. We need our wives. And wherever you come in onto this scale, and once again, I feel I'm very much speaking to the choir, but as far as just understanding it in principle, it can be helpful just to go over it again. But you need your wife to be on your team. She needs to be there. But you know, if you've got a situation, we're trying to be dusty, so that's what I'm trying to be. If you've got a situation where your wife is not necessarily on your team. So if the family is atomized, do you know what that means? Atomized is it breaks into these little particles and just spreads everywhere. If the family is atomized and everyone is doing their own thing, and then the father comes to an understanding of how his family should be functioning, it becomes very difficult. You're at this disintegrated state or disintegrating state, and now suddenly how do you sort this out? So first of all, as we've said, he needs to be equipped, he needs to be prepared. And that would come about through his own studying, discipleship, learning what is expected of him. But then he needs to get his wife on board. He needs to win her to the vision and help her to become part of his team, to be his helper in this calling. An important step in achieving this is to hear her heart. It really is. You've got a wife who's living her own life in many respects, and everybody in the family is doing their own thing. I believe one of the practical ways that the husband can bring his wife back into the team or start winning her into the team is to truly listen to her. Listen to her fears, desires. I'm talking about a godly wife. I'm not talking about somebody who has no interest in the Lord whatsoever. Give her time to share, to express her desires. Doesn't mean she becomes the director and the leader of the family. The husband is still in charge. But there's this discussion and opening up where the wife comes to a position where she truly believes her husband hears her desires, hears her concerns, and hears her stuff. He doesn't have to answer all the issues and bring solutions to the problems, but there's a real forum where she's able to express these things and he's able to just listen and pray about it and think about it. What that does is opens up her heart toward him and gives her the confidence to submit herself to him. That's a critical aspect of that relationship, where she can trust him. And part of that trusting is being able to share with him and knowing that he's listening. He's listening to her and hearing what she's saying. And once again, it's not solutions. You're not solving every issue that's raised. You're just giving opportunity on a regular basis to hear that. This is different from the maintenance we talked about. It's more like trying to restore something that has fallen apart. So you're allowing this discussion to continue. I believe it's vital for having your wife's heart. And vital of that is her knowing that you truly do hear her. And when she knows that and she can then entrust herself to you, I believe she then is in a position where she can be instructed and receive teaching from you. So such times, as I said, are not when you answer the questions. You're just listening and considering and praying. So it's vital that the wife comes on board if you're going to have an effective team. So, you know, if there's a priority, if there's a family that's disintegrating, then there are certain things that you need to focus upon first, and that would be one. So, okay, I need to get my wife on board here. But like I said, sometimes you've got simultaneous things going on that need attention, and so it's not always simple just to do one thing after the other. Sometimes you're doing a few things at the same time. What if your children's hearts are everywhere but home? They're all over the place. It's the next thing, because if a family, once it disintegrates, that's exactly what's happening. Everyone's hearts are gone. They're connected to some other person, some other goal, some other objective, and they've left the base, and therefore this whole unit of God's kingdom, it cannot function. So if that is a situation, whatever degree that is, realize, as we said with the previous one when we're talking about discipleship, that previous training has led to that position. This has been achieved because of previous training and instruction. So many years of training have gone into it, and therefore sometimes, depending on ages and situations, sometimes it takes a significant amount of time to pull things in. You know, I don't believe you can just overnight change some circumstances. I'm not talking about circumstances that are sinful and those kinds of things. I'm talking about just some kinds of habits and behaviors and patterns that have been established and entrenched in lives. As somebody trying to pull something in from that, there needs to be the patience and understanding that, you know, this could take time. And not to be discouraged when you don't see instant success, because sometimes that kind of discouragement can make you give up or throw up your hands in despair and say, this is not working, it'll never work. But there's definite goals, and you say, okay, I'm trying to pull these in. So to turn the affections towards home so they can become an effective team. That's the goal. That's what you're trying to do. That's what I'm trying to achieve here. That's what I'm trying to aim at. So bring their hearts home to instruct and train and give them the vision. We've talked about the basic discipline and training last time, because if you don't have your child's attention and they can't listen to you, then how are they going to be part of an effective team? You'd never see any team that didn't listen to instructions achieving anything. But there are other things that need to be worked on. things that draw the hearts away from home. Remember, we live in a culture where atomistic thinking is the norm. That is the guaranteed norm. That's how American society functions. Everyone's doing their own thing. They're out there functioning according to their own desires and whims. And in a previous generation, you'd look back, say, maybe from the 60s, maybe looking back, I'm not sure, and say, you know what's destroying the American family? Is everybody sitting around watching television? And that's probably true. It was probably having a huge impact. I believe it was. But you know, now, they don't even have the appearance of sitting together. Because you go to television, everyone's got their own television in their room, their own DVD player, their own PC, their own iPod, and that's it. They're all in their own situations and doing their own thing, their own agendas, their own goals, their own external activities. So you've got this atomistic society, and that's what dominates our culture. That's promoted. I've had flyers coming in the mail saying, get satellite television, and we offer you a free installation in four rooms. I'm thinking... You're thinking, that's just, they're marketing to the society that we live in, that everyone's going to have their own. And four rooms is the ideal family, isn't it? Probably the parents' bedroom, the lounge, and the two children's bedrooms, and that's the perfect family. But what we need to realize, that's what we're getting bombarded with, and that's what we're fighting against and wrestling against constantly. The home then just becomes a place which is kind of like a refueling station, and the parents are there to supply the food and the shelter and the latest gizmos to their children. That's basically how society functions. And everyone has their own goals and timetables. So it's not a small thing to transition out of that and to live our lives, try and be consistent in that kind of a society and assume the picture that we see in the scriptures of what God shows a godly family to be. So we're all impacted to a certain degree by these ideas because we live in this society. And unless we're being self-consciously biblical in all that we think about, we'll become casualties as well. So how do you transform a family from this atomistic, self-serving emphasis into being an efficient unit, carrying out effective dominion tasks? Probably the first thing you realize is that there's an intense battle going on. And we, even as believers who are already thinking on these lines, we need to realize that this intense battle doesn't cease. It continually bombards us from every angle. And it's raging over our children's hearts. That's what it is. It's raging over who's going to have their hearts for the next generation. It's raging over our hearts as well. It wants our hearts to be pulled away. But that's where the battle is raging. It's constantly there, and it's trying to pull those hearts away to take us back to that Malachi chapter 4 scenario where the hearts of the fathers are turned away from the children and the hearts of the children are turned away from the fathers, because that brings about the victory for the kingdom of darkness. So that's where he hits. He says, okay, I don't need to do anything else. All I need to do is just turn this into an atomistic society. And basically, he's almost achieved his end. He's almost achieved his goal. So if we realize this is the battle, this is what's going on. So when you're looking at different things and evaluating different situations, you're realizing there's a battle here. I need to have discernment so I can see, is this doing what I don't want it to do? Is this creating something that is detrimental to my family? So there is this all-out war for our children's hearts. It is constant and unrelenting, and unless we are bringing every thought captive to the obedience of Christ, we won't even recognize the dangers. So when we're talking about any aspect of life related to our children, whether it's education, whether it's training, whether it's a definition of who they are, you can come up with any other aspect that you might think of related to our children. When you're thinking about any of those things, we need to realize that every argument in the world and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God with respect to these things is designed purposefully to pull their hearts away. That's what it's going to be doing. It's going to be pulling them away from this unit that God has designed for this effective carrying out of His purposes. So every idea that suggests a way of doing something connected to our children's lives and our family life that is not based upon Scripture is at war with God's kingdom. And it's at war with our goals for our children. It's declaring war upon it. So that's why it's vital to gather the heart and to have the heart. How does it come about where you manage to hold and keep the heart? What does that require? What is involved there? Time. No, vital. We're talking on two levels, really. Okay, we've got the Holy Spirit working and dealing, so we're praying, we're doing that thing. We're talking here on more practical level. What is a father's responsibility to try and capture that? We can't change hearts. You're right. So we've got, you see, once we're trying to keep this big picture and we're realizing, okay, the way I speak, the way I communicate and deal, because we've got this truth, and that's what we'll cover next time. We've got an absolute word, but there's the application of an absolute word. There's a way that we have to apply it. Okay, so that becomes an important dynamic in the whole outworking of God's plan as we try and pass on this vision. So we're trying to win our children's hearts. We're trying to keep their hearts. So we're realizing everything, whether it's action or it's a way we relate, all these things are shaping and directing the future generation. And so when we realize that, we say, well, okay, I do need to bring every thought captive, every idea I have, every purpose I come up with, whether it's a training purpose or whatever it is, needs to be submitted to God's truth. So whatever suggests itself in connection to our parents, you know, maybe your father used to threaten you in a certain way, and so you just pass that on. You know, that's just because that's how you were trained, as opposed to thinking, I've got to bring that thought captive. Can I just communicate in that way because that's my history, that's my heritage? So nothing is neutral in this world. It's not indifferent. It's either upholding God's kingdom and advancing that ultimate goal of dominion, or it's at war with His kingdom. So we're talking about educational methods. We're talking about every aspect of life is either advancing the kingdom or is at war with the kingdom. And it's out to destroy our child. It's out to destroy our family. It's out to destroy future families. So that's what its goal is. Just because someone appears to be a nice person and they say that they're trying to be helpful and they're very cheerful and they're smiling and the things they do appear to be really nice, that doesn't mean that they're not at war with the kingdom of heaven. There's very nice Auntie Mildreds out there who are really nice ladies from a human perspective that are at war with the kingdom of God. They're at war with God's view of the family. They're at war with our understanding of how we should train our children and what would be the best for them. And we need to realize that. We need to be alerted to it so that we can discern that and not be caught flat-footed when we're confronted with this and think, whoa, what's going on? So there is this battle, and it comes in many shapes and forms. So any idea and influence that is contrary to God's truth and contrary to godly family structures is there to rip your child's heart away from you. So there's no neutrality about anything. To be able to accomplish the vision, we need to be aware of those things that can steal away their hearts and cut those things off. Sometimes it needs to be ruthless. It's plucking out an eye, and sometimes it's a process that you're working bad habits out, you're working bad systems out, and you're not quite sure how to deal with this. Now it's, you know, in a sense, it's kind of, it's wrong, but it's so entrenched. How do I deal this? How do I backtrack and pull it back? Particularly when you've got older children, how do you deal with that? So there needs to be that sensitivity. I believe that's the kind of aspect Bill is talking about. You know, how do you deal in a way? Because remember, you have trained them in a certain way of behaving, and it could be years and years of training, and now you're just going to reverse it overnight? Sometimes it's not possible. And sometimes you can alienate the relationship. You can cut off the relationship just because of being insensitive to the stuff. And you can be frustrated with yourself because of the bad parenting you've been doing. But then you kind of continue that bad parenting in a different way. The goal is always trying to win their heart, even when you're trying to change a situation from the wrong path you've been going on to bring it back, whether it's with just basic training or whether it's with the whole vision and trying to get the momentum going of the family. It's a radical thing, and I think sometimes we can put a time frame on that is too tight. And what it does, it makes us frustrated as the leaders, and it just kind of alienates our relationship, as opposed to saying, you know, sometimes you might just sit down and say, this could take 3 years to get to where I want to go. Literally could take 3 years to pull things in, to shore up certain aspects and focus on these things, and we're moving along. And to know, I believe, you need to have the understanding. Now, we're not talking about being lazy here and saying, oh, well, it'll work. I'm talking about where you're self-consciously working, and the plan is, I'm moving in degrees, but this is where we're going, because I want to have their hearts, and I want to bring their hearts with me to arrive at this goal. And so I believe that's a critical aspect, particularly when there's restoration from an atomistic society. People need to realize that, because one person catches the vision, and suddenly, whoa, everybody's got to be on the right page, and it's not always possible. So there's the vital aspect there of bringing your wife. There's the vital aspect then of together trying to pull your children. Now, as I said, it is complicated because every circumstance is so different and the dynamics are different. So you really are dependent upon the Lord in a great measure. I would say it depends on what they're doing. You know, until they get to a certain age where they're dependent on the parents for support and stuff, then I think the hope and the desire and the work is constantly there. When you get to an age now where the child is saying, look here, I could care less. I'm going to live my life. I'm whatever the golden age is, 19 years old. And as far as I'm concerned, and if they like, I mean, if they're 19 and they say, look here, Dad, I've had enough of church. I'm just, you know, you can set the parameters of what their behavior needs to be in your house if you want to do that. I think you've got a problem where there's a rebellion against the rules in the house. And at that stage, because we can't take him to the state, if he refuses to submit to those, then you have to be strong and say, sorry, you're out of here. I'm not tolerating. I'm not going to subsidize and support this kind of behavior. So I would say, while they're dependent, I think you can keep holding those reins. But part of that is also your dependence upon the Lord to find his wisdom in how to deal with the situation. Sometimes, you know, sometimes there's a way of looking at something and a way of approaching something where you're kind of just clashing on heads, whereas if you came at a different angle, it would, you know, I'm not saying that's the only thing, but sometimes the Lord is pushing us onto him where we're saying, Lord, I really don't know how to do this. And it can make us wrestle. Every child is different. And I believe that's part of the dynamic, is that we're constantly dependent. You know, for example, we were talking about it, one of our devotions, about probably Mary, you know, after Jesus was 5 years old, writing the child-raising book, the perfect child because of her parenting methods. But each child is so different, and, you know, it really is a constant growing process that the parents are going through. So there's this battle, and it's constantly trying to pull their hearts. What things do pull their hearts away, or can pull their hearts away? Busyness, relationships, peers of all kinds of sorts. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to keep their heart at home. We try to recognize the things that tend to pull their hearts away, because you can't compete with those things. Sometimes you have to realize, I can't compete. If you get a 5-year-old and you put down there some vegetables on the table and some candy and say, help yourself. And there's certain things that you can't compete with as parents in your children's lives. But if you're aware of them and you're conscious of it and you have the courage to say, I'm prepared to draw a line here, because I see the detrimental effect, even if it's just on my children's lives, you know, they're not mature enough for X, Y, or Z, and it can vary and change, so as long as we're aware of that. So baby steps to change. If it's been an atomistic society and you're trying to bring it back, baby steps to move back and make an effective team. But that's your goal, that's what you're aiming at, and that's what you keep sharing, that's what you keep saying. This is what we're trying to do, this is where we're trying to go, and this is what we're trying to accomplish. How do you know what your family vision should be? Well, this too can take time. It doesn't just necessarily drop out the sky. If you're coming from a background where that hasn't been part of your thinking, that hasn't been part of your life, it can take a long time. But where do you start looking? Well, you start praying, you start seeking the Lord and saying, Lord, we're trying to be effective. We want to exercise this Matthew 28 principle of discipling the nations. How that looks, I don't even want to try and begin to list what that could look like, because it's so diverse and I could never even come up with the list if I tried. But there's certain unique giftings and abilities and circumstances that every family has that enables them to be effective in their particular way to accomplish that goal. And it's going to be different. I think I've mentioned it once before in one of my sermons, but I read a story of 3 or 4 different soldiers, said it was 3, and they were recounting their experiences in this battle, war experiences. And one guy was talking and saying, well, you know, we just sat there for 3 days. We didn't see anybody. We just held our little foxhole and we just guarded this position and saw absolutely nothing. And the other guy says, well, we had some few skirmishes with the enemy. And the other guy said, we didn't stop firing. I mean, for 3 days, our barrels were hot as the enemy just kept coming in wave after wave after wave. And we held it back. And it turns out that they're all talking about the same battle, the Battle of the Bulge, and just different places and positions in that one battle. And the different responsibilities and the way it was carried out was just so different. And it's a good illustration of how different our own callings and abilities and gifting are. It doesn't quite parallel with that illustration, just showing that the diversity of this one kingdom plan is very great. And so arriving at that vision, how can we be effective? How can we be the most effective as our family? It can take time, which means it can be a lot of praying, interceding, and just evaluating your own circumstances to arrive at what it could be. We said that the most fundamental unit in the working of God's kingdom and fulfilling his dominion purposes is the family. If we can understand that, then we realize why we are having the emphasis and pouring our lives into this. Thus, it's vital we realize how important it is for the family unit to have a vision. That is, to be involved in applying God's truth to all of life in their own unique situation and circumstances and according to their ability. So fathers and the family need to be shouldering the weight of this dominion work. And this is not a burden, but it's a yoke, I believe, that is easy to carry. This is where the generational effectiveness flows from. And the family, not the local congregation, is the key thrust of that. The local congregation is there to equip the saints for the work of the ministry. But I believe the family is the key thrust that is going to push that. I'm not saying the church has no role and make an organization to do something. Those are all different kingdom works. But the family is at the crux of that. So I pray that we all sincerely seek the Lord as families about our vital and unique role in this grand outworking of God's kingdom purposes as we seek to do his will. And it's almost an authority struggle then as well with the church sometimes, because they feel threatened by a decentralized program. And particularly if you've got something that's established and dependent upon a different way of thinking, you know, that's kind of entrenched. It's hard to change that. And when it's not coming from the home, if the husband is indifferent and stuff, then women find this other outlet. And I think that's why you see so many women in these kinds of things, because the men have failed in their own vision and calling and responsibility. So that's what we're trying to restore in our own families. We're trying to restore it in our own society. Because you've got activities going on, but you've got the key aspect of God's kingdom falling apart. I was telling Rob on Sunday of a little boy who used to be in our school in Zimbabwe, Christian school. It was just very difficult to train and educate him. He didn't have a father, but he had a mother. And his mother was involved in incredibly dangerous mission work in another country and would be away from home for extended periods. And most people just praised her at her sacrifice. And, you know, and you're thinking, then the kingdom is breaking down here. But here's this woman, in the eyes of probably every Christian she met just about, was saying, man, what an example of godliness, because you've missed the thrust. And the church is not helping when they encourage that. And there was a church supporting her to do that. And you're thinking, well, I hope this is reaching a need when we're trying to deal in dusty reality. It's always liable to be more controversial because you're trying to apply truth in a very down-to-earth, practical way. It's far easier to talk about lofty theological terms and say, well, what is this actually going to look like on Monday morning? Well, faithfulness in the details is really what it's about. And that's time-consuming and inconvenient. And therefore, if you've got a very busy schedule, you never have the time to deal with anything properly because you're on the fly and you've got these deadlines and we've got to get there. There's no ways I can not arrive at this certain time. And so, well, you just breeze over this and we throw it about. You know, that's how we undermine our own situation. It's by filling our own lives too full with stuff.